Hi there. Welcome to step one of the program entitled Stepping Stones to Healing and Thriving. Here we are looking at the first step of three that involve topics relating to the mind, our thinking processes. And this one is in particular entitled Healing from the Lies of Child Abuse. You'll come to learn how these lies are part of the foundation of what makes us who we are as trauma survivors. So this step will provide validation and support for overcoming the four core harmful beliefs. These are the lies that we tell ourselves unknowingly. And we will do this with compassion, gentleness, and curiosity. So our goal in this step is to identify the core beliefs and the lies that are behind them. We're going to develop skills to debunk these and reignite your hope for a better future. So this is how it's going to work. The process overview is in three modules: understand, rebuild, and integrate. So module A in understand, we're going to unpack these four fundamental lies. So here we're going to identify these beliefs, and they are that the abuse is your fault, that you are unworthy and unlovable, that you should be ashamed of yourself, and that you're powerless in your life. So understanding these lies can be a powerful step toward reclaiming your truth and transforming your self-perception. Healing always begins with awareness. Module two is about rebuilding. So, in this module, we're going to unpack and challenge the lies that op and offer support for adopting new truths. The objective in this module is to identify how these four lies may have influenced your past and present choices. It will offer a safe space for acknowledging these beliefs without judgment. And you're going to be encouraged with insights that lead to a more authentic and empowered self. Module three, the integrating part, that offers activities and practices that support you as you build new neural pathways for a healthy and sustainable self-supporting mindset. So these build your sense of empowerment and hope. So, module one, understanding the impact. So, before we expose the lies, we're going to understand the impact of the child abuse. So, child abuse of any kind, whether it's physical, emotional, or sexual, they all cause deep psychological wounds. Studies are showing that neglect, especially emotional neglect, is equally psychologically and biologically damaging as sexual abuse. Isn't that something? And this is because not having someone to console, to nurture, to guide, and to protect. So, like overt abuse, it leaves the child in a state of chronic unsafety, fear, and unworthiness. Abuse survivors believe that no one cares, that they're not worth the time and effort, and that there's no one there for them. So they're on their own, and so on. And this is overwhelming to the delicate nervous system of a little child. These feelings funnel down into false beliefs that are summed up in the four pillars of emotional development in abuse survivors. So one of them, I am to blame. Believing that you are somehow responsible for what happened to you, the abuse, it's the belief that somehow you failed your parents or your siblings or yourself. That's actually quite common. And the reason is that toddlers are self-absorbed. At this early developmental stage, they are just learning the sense of other. They are just beginning to develop a sense of autonomy and meaning making. So when abuse or tragedy happens to them and no one is there to help them understand what is happening, validate and regulate their emotions, That's how trauma happens. And trauma is the word for wounding. Yes, their brain and nervous system sense that it all happened because of them, because of who they are. They cannot separate the idea of doing something bad and being bad, especially when they're told that they deserve the mistreatment. Perhaps when abused, you were told that if you didn't do such and such, or because you are a certain way, then the abuse wouldn't happen. Or maybe you were told that if you weren't so cute, daddy or uncle or grandpa or whoever, they wouldn't do this to you. It's warped. So as a child, you would not understand that this speech is a horrific form of psychological manipulation. This belief stays with the abused child well into adulthood until they learn the truth. The next lie is feeling unworthy and unlovable. This is where we believe with all our hearts, I must be unlovable. That's why my mom or dad or whoever isn't nice to me. That's why they beat me or whatever. That's why they treat me this way. I must be a horrible person. The chronic sense of guilt that is carried can be blended with the sense of unworthiness or unlovableness. And then there's shame. So shame is believing that you are bad, not that you've done something bad. It's a belief that you're never good enough. That you are defective to your core, deep inside. Shame is a word that is sometimes cringe-worthy. It doesn't even like to hear its own name spoken. Have you noticed this? And yet, shame is such a deeply entrenched feeling that all child abuse survivors carry it. It's often buried, though, so deep and lived with for so long. That we forget that it's even there. Yet it is there, always lingering in the background. Shame likes to hang out with other emotions, such as guilt and unworthiness, which can sometimes make it challenging to distinguish it from the shame. But here are some examples of feeling shame, and I invite you to consider whether any of these resonate with you. Shame can compel us to hide the truth. We don't want to talk about the mistakes we've made. We may lie about ourselves in some ways or live in a chronic state of denial. Or shame may be the catalyst to a type A personality of perfectionism, working really hard to project a confident and together image so that you and others can see you as a high-quality, successful person. Not as someone who's not good enough. There's also imposter syndrome, where there is a deep-seated belief that if people really knew you, they wouldn't like you. This impacts all relationships and can lead to a life of isolation or of holding yourself back. There also can be the constant fear of rejection. So living authentically or developing healthy reciprocal relationships feels impossible. Or perhaps there's some underlying anger about how you were treated as a child, and this may have impacted your self-esteem and confidence. All of these have an underlying thread of shame woven into it. And the fourth lie is powerlessness, the undercurrent belief that nothing we ever do will change the way your life is right now. You might think, what's the point of making changes? Or what's the point of trying? Perhaps you've had moments of despair and hopelessness. Another way this may show up is perhaps you found that you can begin a good healthcare regime, but after a while it seems unsustainable. Or maybe you're starting a project, but you're not able to finish it, or there's some level of self-sabotage involved. Or maybe you feel stuck, just stuck for various reasons and can't seem to find it a sustainable solution that works. And what about procrastination? Does that show up in your life? And you feel like powerless to overcome it? These and more are linked to an underlying belief of powerlessness. Perhaps if you go back to your childhood, you experienced from your abuser threats of death or harm if you told. And of course, when you're little, you're going to believe that, right? So that is designed to keep you from telling, talking about what happened to you, and that causes that child to feel powerless because their voice, being their only weapon, was taken away. So now you're welcome to pause the presentation and go to your workbook. And in this first module, you're going to be looking at the impact of these four basic lies that have come from your childhood trauma. There are journal prompts, so writing about how learning about these four lies have impacted you. And it's an opportunity to bring clarity to your life, not to cause you to feel shame. So this section is just really about noticing if and how these four basic lies may have been behind your choices, your decisions, your way of being, etc. So now we go on to module two. We're challenging the lies and adopting new truths about yourself. So here we're going to recognize that these beliefs are not true. Child abuse survivors and neglect survivors of neglect, they tend to deny what happened and minimize the damage it caused them. I hear very often from child abuse survivors that, "Oh, I had a great childhood." And one of the reasons is that to face the truth, it would cause such unbearable pain. It would cause such pain to admit that family members actually treated you in such horrific ways. So sometimes there's a tendency to explain the neglectful or abusive behavior on their parents' part by blaming themselves, or again, denying its existence. Or even excusing the behavior, thinking, well, I must have deserved it somehow because my parents are great. So by doing this, they disconnect from their pain. So children naturally seek approval and love from their parents. From birth onward, children need to develop emotional attachment to their primary caregivers. It keeps them alive. So, when abuse occurs, they may try to rationalize it by believing they must have done something wrong to deserve it. It's a way to maintain a sense of control or to justify the behavior of their caregivers. Or it can be a way for the child to survive the abuse. They don't want to subconsciously believe that their parent is unstable or wrong because the consequences of acknowledging this, that they're being abused, could lead to further punishment or worse, abandonment. So believing they are at fault may feel less frightening than facing the reality of abuse. Some common manifestations of this limiting beliefs are they struggle to form healthy relationships due to that fear of abandonment, or not trusting that they're worthy of love and commitment, like their low self-esteem. That also can cause a person to criticize themselves, focusing on their perceived flaws and believing that everyone else sees and knows how imperfect and full of flaws they are. It can lead to self-imposed isolation or self-destructive behavior and emotional dysregulation. Self-destructive or compulsive behavior is a way to numb the pain of the belief in one's unworthiness or unlovableness. It's a way of fleeing away from the deep emotional injuries. So when healthy love is offered, it is difficult to trust and accept it. Pushing others away and avoiding emotional intimacy is common. So as an adult, Do you believe deep within you that you are worthy of unconditional love? As adults, we forget the truth that all children have a limited understanding of responsibility and of cause and effect. As previously discussed, the belief that we caused, or that we're to blame for what happened, is usually carried on through adulthood. It stays with us. This lack of understanding becomes a belief that is not true, especially when there's no one around that can counter this belief. Is it true that you, as a small child, are responsible for what happened to you? Look around. Notice the innocence and the naivety of small children. How can they re be responsible for how an adult treats them? It is the same as you in your experience. How can you be responsible for the abuse you suffered? So, therefore, in adulthood, evidence of unwarranted guilt shows up in our relationships with others and how we view and treat ourselves. Professionally and personally, perhaps you've noticed that you tend to seek approval, or when things go wrong, you assume it's because of something you've done or failed to do. Or perhaps you've noticed that you tend to feel responsible for things that are actually beyond your scope. Other challenges may have included setting boundaries. How are you at doing that? How are you at ensuring that you are being treated fairly and respectfully? Do you find yourself apologizing excessively? So, gaining clarity on what you are truly responsible for helps lessen the load that you are carrying. And abusers may manipulate children into believing they are at fault, or may use gaslighting tactics to distort reality and make the child doubt their own perceptions. This can reinforce the child's belief that they are to blame. The abuser might say twisted things like, "Well, you didn't say no, you didn't stop me." Or, as they're hitting you, "Why do you make me do this to you or treat you like that?" So that causes the child to believe that they must have wanted or deserved the abuse somehow. It is so manipulative. So then this child grows up believing that they are twisted or warped inside, and that there's something seriously wrong with them. So at a young age, they don't have the cognitive prowess to understand they are being gaslit or manipulated. As children, we naturally need and crave affection. We need to feel attached for survival. And we're not mentally developed enough to understand the whole gamut of what is going on when we don't. So we can feel confused, scared, bad, dirty, that we deserve the abuse, and so on. Eventually, we start to wonder, why would anyone like me? Why would anyone love me? And some have wondered why God would permit this to happen to them unless they somehow deserve this. So, what is truth? So, these thoughts in a young child's mind lead to believing they are unlovable and unworthy. They are to blame for the abuse, that they should be ashamed of themselves, and the feeling of powerlessness becomes chronic. And unless abuse survivors unpack and shed these four fundamental lies by planting seeds of truth and taking back their power, these lies won't ever go away. Our brain is like a computer that receives faulty programming. New programming is needed so the whole system runs more effectively and efficiently. So, mental fitness issues. Child abuse is closely linked to various mental health conditions or mental fitness conditions that include depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, or complex PTSD. It can exacerbate symptoms of these disorders and contribute to a cycle of negative thinking and emotional distress. Some people call that doom looping. Some individuals may resort to maladaptive coping mechanisms to get away from the awful feelings that accompany child abuse. Some of these are substance abuse, various addictions, self-harming behaviors, or various compulsions. So, for clarity, choosing maladaptive avoidance behaviors is not limited to just overdrinking or the use of drugs. It can include workaholism, hyper-religiosity, or the use of spiritual practices to avoid facing unwanted or unpleasant feelings. It could be just wasting hours scrolling on your phone or on social media, being a shopaholic, over-exercising. I think you get the picture. So basically, it's doing anything so that the survivor of the abuse doesn't feel. And, it's now believed that in some circles, ADD and ADHD may be trauma responses, part of the flee response. So, what is often behind these things is a level of fear and shame for what happened. Therefore, these mental fitness challenges may contribute to a cycle of negative thinking and emotional distress. Feeling ashamed. So, because of feeling shame, individuals may resort to maladaptive coping mechanisms to get away from the awful feelings that accompany child abuse. So, as mentioned, some of these are substance abuses, various addictions, self-harming behaviors, and various compulsions. So, for clarity, choosing avoidance behaviors is not limited to overdrinking or use of drugs, as I've mentioned. It involves the other things, workaholism, hyper-religiosity, and so on. So it's basically doing anything that can distract you so you don't feel the awful feeling of shame. But in reality, what is often behind these things is a level of fear and shame about what happened. And then there's the fear of rejection, which also triggers a sense of shame. So, children may worry that if others were to discover the abuse, they would be rejected or abandoned by their peers or their family or their caregivers. This fear of rejection can intensify feelings of shame and lead to a reluctance to seek help or disclose the abuse. They may internalize anything going wrong as their fault or feel destroyed inside from a negative feedback or criticism, viewing themselves as inherently flawed or unworthy. Shame may show up as a reluctance to join in with others, in shyness or social awkwardness. Or it could even be the opposite spectrum. Like, for example, it could manifest as a false sense of confidence or arrogance or a lack of humility. And that can stem from a deep fear that their secret may be exposed, the secret that they truly are bad, sick, horrible, a demented person. That is their belief. Shame can also be behind what keeps a person independent or a loner, afraid to get too close, unwilling or afraid to be emotionally vulnerable with others. Some abuse survivors in adulthood believe that everybody knew when they were little and wonder why no one did anything to save or protect them. This underscores that they hold shame or believe that they are unworthy and unlovable. This can manifest in choosing partners who mistreat them in various ways, or they notice that the people they work with are similar to their abusers. Setting boundaries might be difficult, but it becomes easier when we come to see our own worth and believe in it. The feelings of powerlessness. So, because children can't stop the abuse, it evokes the feeling of powerlessness. And as we mentioned earlier, they might feel voiceless too. This again, these feelings can stay and that leads to that belief about themselves as adults. They might struggle with setting and maintaining boundaries. We may avoid conflict at any cost. We might feel helpless in stressful situations. We might have difficulty making decisions. So some abuse survivors develop a tendency to rely on others for nearly everything, believing they're incapable of doing things on their own. Some have difficulty setting goals and achieving them, and some engage in self-sabotage like procrastination and undermining their own success. So if there are recurring trauma symptoms like flashbacks and nightmares of ongoing hypervigilance, it can make it difficult for survivors to feel safe or in control of their own lives. All of these symptoms are real, and they cause a genuine struggle to overcome without professional trauma-educated help and support. So we're back at the workbook time, so feel free to pause the presentation if you'd like and follow the prompts. Again, we've unpacked a little bit more of the shame, blame, unworthiness, unlovable, and powerlessness, the four pillars of our psychological trauma. So how do these lies impact, or how are they behind your choices and the decisions you've made? And how does it show up how you interact with others? So this and more is in this module, this section. So continue to follow the prompts in the workbook. Now we go on to module three. So here we're going to be adopting strategies that build your sense of empowerment and hope. Here we're going to get to the part where you can practice sitting with the feelings that are evoked by the lies of child abuse and offer yourself the space and grace needed to rebuild new neural pathways so that your sense of self and your nervous system can work together and heal the wounds with a lot of self-compassion and understanding. And I'll be your guide for that. So addressing self-blame. So we remember that abuse is always the fault of the abuser, never the victim. Remind yourself that you were innocent and did not deserve what happened to you. You are not old enough to give consent. You may need to say this to yourself repeatedly so that the new belief that the abuse is not your fault moves from your head down to your heart. Your goal is to have this correct truth become a core belief. It needs to be embodied. Building new neural pathways takes time, so don't be discouraged if it takes weeks, perhaps months of ongoing practice. Affirmations are just one avenue, and they can work when the body's nervous system feels ready, but more is needed. We also need to address shame. So, Beverly Engel, the author of the book, It Wasn't Your Fault, she addresses toxic shame throughout various exercises and in reasonable language. So, one of the things she speaks about is forgiving yourself for what happened to you. Well, right away, you might think, well, I know the abuse wasn't my fault. And this is true, it's an important first step. Yet, most likely, there is a part of you somewhere deep inside that blames yourself for your involvement in the abuse. Perhaps there's some blame for being submissive or passive or not fighting back. You may blame yourself for not telling someone about the abuse, or you may feel shame because of the way your body responded to the abuser's touch. Admittedly, sexual touch does feel good, and when we are exposed to sexual stimulation as children, we do not and cannot understand what is happening or why. Forgiving yourself will be easier when you remind yourself you were a child when it occurred. And remind yourself that you are separate from the abuse that you endured. It is not all of who you are. It is a chapter in your life. It was a part of you. It isn't your whole life nor your whole identity. With healing, you'll come to see this more and more. This is where I find that inner child work or parts work are invaluable in self-forgiveness. But why is it so hard? Well, overcoming shame takes a long time and a lot of work because there are layers to the shame process. It runs deep, deep, deep. So, learning to notice where shame is held in your body and listening to the feelings and thoughts that come with shame is where you can learn to offer shame some compassion and understanding. Because what happened to you is not your fault. So, overcoming powerlessness. So, I invite you to imagine yourself as a young child, or the next time you're around children who are the age of you or when you were first abused. I invite you to take a close look at them and observe how they interact and behave. Ponder their innocence and trusting nature. Notice how small the child is in size when compared to the adults around them. Think about how easy it would be for an adult or an older child to physically pin that child down and make it hard for them to fight them off. Reflect on how dependent the child is on the adults around them. Is that child still needing someone to provide food, clothing, shelter, maybe to be their chauffeur? Now remind yourself that you are no longer a child. You are now an adult with much more resources for safety and protection, and you have more independence. So sit with this acknowledgement and see what happens to that feeling of powerlessness. Does it lessen or even dissipate? So addressing unworthiness and unlovableness. Practicing self-love so you can build your self-worth can feel awkward at first. If you've always felt unworthy or unlovable or even subterranean, then poking your head above ground and trying to see yourself as equal to others and worthy often feels like conceit, and it can trigger a trauma response. I've struggled with the feeling of not being good enough for most of my life, so I understand how hard overcoming this unhealthy mindset can be. But that's okay, because I'm here with you to support you with this process. I would suggest that you practice sitting with or staying with the thought or remembrance of achieving a certain goal that you reached. And it might have been something that you've accomplished that no one else in your circle has. Maybe it was learning a new language or moving and starting over. Perhaps it was learning a musical instrument or some other form of artistic expression like sculpting, dancing, canvas art. Do you do hobbies like photography? Staying with acknowledging that you accomplished something. What happens when you do? Another idea is to ask a friend or two to write down what they admire about you and read this often. And when you're reading this out loud, notice the physiological response you have and tell yourself, this is what it feels like to be respected. This is what it feels like to be appreciated. This is what it feels like to be loved. And sit with the feelings until they no longer cause a heightened response. This may take several attempts, and that's okay. Healing is a gentle and compassionate process. So we haven't touched on, pardon me, we have not touched on some of the physical symptoms that child abuse survivors deal with, like feeling fatigued, burdened down, they've got pain in their gut, they have inflammation, autoimmune disorders, and so on. But that is still explored in this 9-step program, and it is part of the series that are related to the body. But in particular, we will unpack that in module 5. But the best way to overcome the residual effects of child abuse is with self-compassion, as we have discussed. Self-compassion is the antidote to shame. When the abuse and the shame that comes with it is acknowledged and validated, layer by layer, you will notice a shift happening inside of you. Your confidence will grow. You will become more clear on what is your responsibility and what is not. You will begin to feel more empowered and eventually stop carrying unwarranted guilt. So, the four lies we covered are the foundation of the limiting beliefs that exist in survivors of childhood trauma. By addressing each one, I hope that you can feel more hopeful about your trauma recovery and happy with the skills you have learned thus far. You deserve to live a life that is free from the shackles of abuse, where you can live authentically, enjoying the beauty that life offers in the moments that they happen. You deserve to feel free. And there is hope. I promise you. So again, it's our workbook time. You're invited to go back to your workbook. You can pause the presentation, but we're just about at the end. So you can go to the workbook and look at the practices and various exercises and activities that are there and help you develop an action plan for supporting yourself in overcoming the four lies of abuse. And we've come to the end, so congratulations on completing this step, healing from the lies of child abuse. So you've seen that you have learned the four basic lies that abuse teaches us and how their deep roots affect us survivors. You have learned a few tools for debunking these lies. So I invite you gently and with compassion to keep practicing the activities and learning and practicing self-compassion and self-forgiveness, because doing so will help you become shackle-free later on.